Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Prep Life Podcast. This is your founder and CEO of Glam Girl Bikini, Amy Anger. And today I have the special privilege of interviewing IFBB professional Ashlyn Brown. Ashlyn, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm so honored to be here. Thank you for reaching out. And I'm really excited to be on here today. So I appreciate it.
Yeah. So if you don't mind just telling our audience a little bit about yourself, your background, what you do, where you live, all that.
Yeah, of course. So I'm located in Arizona, and I have been here for just like about a year and a half with my husband. We came out here for work. So I do, I'm a fitness and nutrition coach for Fit Body Fusion. And I am certified as a fitness nutrition specialist as well as a personal trainer. So I was actually in school for dental. I wanted to go to school for dental hygiene.
Oh, okay.
I was in school when I realized like I'm studying way more in my off time of like nutrition and just like fitness. It was just something that was really interesting to me. And I was just noticing that I was studying that way more. So I was like, you know, I think I'm going to try and make a switch. Obviously this was years ago, so it wasn't as big as it was now. So when I was doing the dental school, it was really more of like, I really wanted to have, you know, a good life, and I wanted to make sure that I was taken care of financially. And, you know, I knew that dental was something that always interests me, and it was, you know, financially stable. So that was the reason that I was doing it from the beginning. And I didn't think that I would be able to be as successful in the fitness world. I just didn't think that there was that much money attached to it. And it was something that I was curious about, but I just wasn't sure. So taking that step was scary for me, but it was definitely worth it. And I'm glad that I did it. I actually made the switch after I'd met my husband. So I had a full-time job. I was working for a chiropractor. I was the office manager as well as the chiropractor assistant. So I worked there for a little over a year. And then I decided to quit there and start my own business doing coaching. And that's whenever I ended up along the way finding Jamie. Once I moved out here to Arizona, I ended up finding Jamie, and I was actually coaching. She was coaching me for a while before I even considered being a coach on Fit Body Fusion. So I'd worked with her for a little bit. You know, we had got a really strong just bond between us, and she got to oversee how I coached my athletes, and she really studied me for a little bit before, you know, asking me to come on. And she just really liked the rapport that I had with all my athletes, and she liked the way that I coached, and we have very similar coaching styles. And you know, she knows that I have a huge passion for this, so that's when she asked me to come on board and be a coach for her. So yeah. I just decided to do that, and I've been doing it ever since, and it's just grown, and I can't be more excited for just how everything's panned out so far.
That's awesome. So how did you and your husband meet?
We actually met just through a group of friends. Whenever I was in Dallas, because that's where we met, in Dallas. My family's from there, and he lived there for his job. And so we just met through mutual friends and through like Instagram and stuff. And they all went to the same gym. And like Destination Dallas, Extreme Iron Pro, which is now called something different now, but that's where we used to train at whenever we lived there. So I met him through there, and yeah, we just hit it off immediately. We've basically been inseparable ever since I met him. So
okay, so is he involved in the fitness industry as well?
Oh yeah, he's been doing this forever, since he was like 15 years old.
Wow. Okay. So where did the competing thing start with this passion of nutrition that you had? When did you decide that you were going to start competing?
Honestly, like Instagram really sparked it, you know, because whenever Instagram started becoming more popular, that's how I pretty much found out what it was, because I followed people like Heidi Summers and Jessica Aravallo and Nikki Blackheader, like all the people that are like Instagram famous. They were competing at the time, like once it was like new. And so when I was following their journeys, and they were competing, and I was like, what is this? Like, first of all, how do they look so good? I didn't really understand, because you know, back then the only thing that I thought about was like cardio. Like that's what women did. They did cardio, like, you know, weight training and bodybuilding for women like wasn't necessarily super big. you know, in the fitness industry and
Right.
stuff. And maybe it was just a smaller portion and I just wasn't in that world yet. So for me, it was very new and I didn't know much about it. So I would follow their journeys and it was just something that I really liked to learn about because I had never seen it before. I've always been in cheerleading. I've always been very athletic. I have an athletic background. And so growing up and everything, I've always had something to focus on, a goal to focus on. So when I saw that, you know, these women looked like this, I was like, okay, what are they doing? And when I found out that it was like, you know, really strict dieting and weight training and, you know, stuff like that, it started interesting. It was very interesting to me because it was something that, hey, now I have a goal that I can work towards. So it was something that I was going to be able to focus on after I was done with cheerleading. Cause after I graduated high school, I didn't want to, my mom really wanted me to go into like competitive cheer and, cheering as like in college and stuff. But I just, it just wasn't my passion. You know, I did it all my life and I kind of got, it kind of got something that was, I was bored of it. I wanted something new. So
okay,
that's about what it was.
So when did you prepare for your first competition? When was that? What year?
It was 2015. So I'd actually moved to Dallas to live with my mom. And because I was living in Houston, that's where I'm from, born and raised in Houston. And and I lived with my mom, you know, once I graduated high school, I stayed in Houston. So I got my own apartment. I stayed there. I went to school and I just worked and stuff. And whenever my mom was like by herself, I was like, hey, I kind of want to move away and focus on myself and see what else is out there for me. So I moved to Dallas and the fitness world is so much bigger there. So, you know, it was just something that I was kind of dipping my toes into. And I ended up meeting my first coach ever, which was Trish Warren. And do you know who that is?
No, I've never heard of her.
Trish Warren. So it's, do you know Branch Warren?
Yes.
that's his wife.
Oh, okay. Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah, so I ended up meeting her, and she coached me for my very first show, and I would meet up with her, like, once or twice a week, and then she gave me just, like, a pretty basic diet that, you know, I had to follow. I was very new, so, you know, it was just, like, everything was pretty basic, and I ended up doing my first show with her in Houston, and I just fell in love with it. It was something that, you know, I only prepped for 5 weeks. It was just a I, like, met her, and I was like, hey, I want to do a show. What do you think? And she's like, honestly, you're in pretty good shape. She's like, you know, we should just get ready for a show. There's one coming up in a couple of weeks. Let's just, you know, get ready for it. See how you do. See if you like it. She's like, and then we'll go from there. And I'm like, all right. So I did it. I actually already had a bikini. Someone had just given me a bikini in Houston that they weren't using. So I already had one. I just had to go get it fitted. And it's funny because it's actually lime green and I still have it. And so I look back and I'm like, oh my gosh, that lime green bikini, but I loved it. And it was like, I had so much fun. But once I got there and I saw the girls and like how serious they were, I was like, okay, I got to set my game up. Like I ended up getting, I think it was like seventh place. It was one short. I got first call out, but I didn't actually place. So it was like one short away from placing.
Okay.
And it was really, it was very interesting and eye opening. I got to, that was like, pretty much just like, it basically told me like, all right, I need to get myself in gear. I need to build some muscle. I realized like I had no muscle compared to these women. Cause I just dieted down, you know, and I never had a proper building phase. I didn't even know what that was at the time. So I just, you know, just wanted to see how I liked it and I just fell in love and it was something awesome. So I ended up taking time off, like a whole year, off. So I pretty much built like all 2016. And then, I got back on stage the end of that year. So I literally took an entire year and I competed again that following year. I think it was like the end of November. And that's whenever I got my second place national qualification. So that's whenever, and my husband had coached me all the way up until I turned pro. So he had coached me and done everything like that. So I just did one show with her and then I did the rest with him.
How many shows did you do with him before you met Jamie DeBernard?
Four.
Okay. So that was a fast, was that your only regional show that you did? And then you just did national shows and won your pro card?
Is I did three state, three national. So I did six total.
Okay. What, what show did you get your pro card at then?
Nationals in 2018 in Miami.
Okay. All right. And what are the other national shows that you had done? leading up
I
to
had
that?
done the year before that, like, so when I won my pro card in 2018, the year before that I'd done nationals. So I did nationals in 2017. I got top five. So I got fifth place at my first national show.
Okay. Wow. That's great.
That qualified me to be able to compete again at another national show the following year. Mm-hmm. So I never went back and did another state show. I just went straight back into nationals.
Awesome. Okay. And so would you say, so Miami Nationals or MPC Nationals, you did that one twice. And then what were the other ones that you did that were pro qualifiers?
I did USAs right before I turned pro. So I did, okay. I did the USAs because I only had, you know, that calendar year to mm-hmm. be able to compete at the national shows. And
right.
USAs was one of the ones that I really wanted to try to do. Plus it was in Vegas and I had never been to Vegas before. So I was like, it was something that I really wanted to, I just wanted to go and experience Vegas. So me and my husband, we went to Vegas and we did that show. And then I was in first call out, but again, I got seventh okay. place. Yeah. And so they said I was a little bit too hard. You know, and I had posed really hard. Like I had done that stallion front pose and I'm short. I mean, I'm class A. Mm-hmm. So like that on my frame just made me look really hard. And so, you know, Sandy and Tyler, they told me, you know, just soften up your posing a little bit. You know, you have a great balance and great muscle for bikini. It's just, you're just posing really hard. So just soften up your posing. So that's whenever I kind of, you know, took a step back. Nobody had ever told me anything about my posing before. So I had no clue. I taught myself everything. I taught myself up till pro. I never hired a posing, nothing like that. So everything was just like what I thought I was supposed to be doing. Mm-hmm. And then whenever I got feedback, you know, that I'm posing too hard, that's when I started reevaluating like the different types of poses that you can do. And I ended up taking that stallion pose out and just did the traditional regular front pose.
Uh-huh.
And that worked really well for me. So I ended up getting my pro card right after that. So I got seventh place at USA's, went to nationals, in Miami a couple, like, I think like 3 months later. And I got my pro card there.
Awesome. Okay, so what was your path then after you won your pro card for your pro debut? How much time did you take in between that and your pro debut?
So, in 2018, that was November,
mm-hmm.
and then I took off. I want to say I started prep March, April, May, in April. So I didn't take that long off, November, December, January, February, March, April. I want to say five-ish to 6 months I took off.
Okay.
And I got my calories pretty high. I mean, it was the most that I'd ever eaten. So after I turned pro, I stuck to my reverse 100%. I really wanted to see, I wanted to experiment with macros. I'd always been on meal plan before, always. And then in my off seasons, I kind of just did whatever, because I didn't know how to count macros at the time. And so then I taught myself how to count macros because I went to school for nutrition and to get my certification, because I knew that I wanted to start my coaching stuff. So I went to school for all that. I learned everything. And then by that time I had understood how to do everything. So like I reversed properly. I counted my own macros. I did everything. I got my calories really high. So whenever I met Jamie, when I moved to Arizona, I ended up meeting Jamie and she basically just dieted me down from where we were. So like I gave her the macros that I was at and then we just started prep and then we just dieted down from then. And then I did my first pro show whenever the season started. So the very first show of the 2020 Olympia season, mm-hmm. was in August, and that was the San Antonio Pro. So I did that first show and I just competed as many times as I could that year. So I did 9 shows that year.
Oh, wow. So that was when we were racing for the points. So how did you end up with that point system after that year?
So I never really tried to get the points. Like it was never a strategic thing or anything like that. It was really just how the heck am I going to do on stage with these people? First of all, I'm short. So I was like, I'm going to be up against taller people for the first time ever. So I have no idea what I'm going to look like compared to these tall women. And it was just something that was brand new to me because I've never had a coach other than my husband. And I've never been taught proper posing. I felt brand new. Like I felt like I was learning something completely new. I was very scared, shy scared. just like nervous because I felt like I had so much left to learn, and now I'm being looked at as a pro. And I'm just like, oh, I don't feel like a pro yet. I feel so small. I feel so little. Like, I feel so young in this industry. Like, there's so much left to learn. So, you know, placing in my first, I think it was my third show. I got my first like placing as a pro, which was sixth place. And it was an, it was at, Golden State, Golden
okay.
State.
Mm-hmm.
I got my first placing ever as a pro, sixth place. And that gave me, I think, 1 point. And I was like, oh, and I was on the Olympia list. So I was like, oh my God, I'm on the Olympia list. I thought it was so cool.
Yeah.
And after that, I was just like, you know what? Let's just keep going because I want the judges to get to know me. I didn't really feel like I had that opportunity as an amateur because I didn't compete that much.
Right.
So I felt like I really wanted to get them to know who I was. You know, I felt like I wanted to go to more seminars and I wanted to, I just wanted to go to the shows. I just wanted to be at the shows. I wanted to, you know, get to know people, put myself out there and stuff like that. So the best way to do that obviously is just to compete. And since I was helping with so much with Fit Body Fusion, you know, I would travel with Jamie because she would like, she basically would just like help me, be able to just do what I needed to do to get there, to get my face in front of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then I helped with, I like worked for her while we did that. So like I was working for her at the shows. Like I helped with the booth. I helped with the posing seminars. I did all that stuff. And then in return, she just like helped me get to the shows because I was just so new and I didn't really know anything. So she, you know, went out of her way to really help me to just get there. And then once I got there, you know, I did everything I could to like help Fit Body Fusion and really just be a part of the team and do whatever she needed help with. Cause there's a lot going on at the shows. So I always try to be there to help her with that stuff.
That's awesome. That's a great mentorship too. So how many shows did you actually end up doing in your rookie year?
So my full rookie year, which has been up until this year, I've done 13 shows total.
Oh, wow. Okay. I didn't realize. Yeah, that's true. That's this year. So with the new qualification system, winning the, either you have to win the show or you're, I think, number one on the points list, right? You've pretty much locked that in. And correct me if I'm wrong, it goes to the top 5 points. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. And how many points do you have right now?
32, I believe. Maybe 31. 31 or 32. I can't remember.
Okay. And how, so then, with that system, how many shows have you placed at?
I have placed at, let me see here. I actually put all my shows down that I've done so far. I have placed at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
Wow. And how many second places are there in there?
There is 1, 2, 3 second places.
Okay. And those are at top tier shows. So can you explain to our audience? I think it gets confusing for people that don't know the ins and outs of the industry. Can you kind of explain what the difference is between those tiered shows? Because I believe a lot of the shows that you picked were top tier shows, right? Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah. So, just to be honest, it is really, really confusing. The tier is just the level of like the athletes that show up usually. So it's like their point system is higher.
Right.
So like, if it's like a New York Pro or, it's just like a more prestigious show, like New York Pro, Tampa Pro. So basically mm-hmm. they just choose a couple of shows. Like, and even the Arnold is going to be obviously bigger. Like you have to mm-hmm. apply to be the Arnold.
Right.
So you have to get invited to go, you apply, you get invited. And then Olympia, obviously you have to qualify. So you qualify for those. And then the New York Pro and the Tampa Pro and all those, like, even though they're a higher tier show, mm-hmm. yes, the athlete quality is going to be a lot higher. So you know that you're going up against just top tier athletes basically.
Mm-hmm.
And the point system is higher because they know that that show is just a little bit more prestigious. So they just choose a couple shows out of the year that are that are just higher level, knowing that there's going to be higher level athletes that want to do that show, and then they offer you more points for those placings.
Yeah, and so those that are listening, for example, you got second at a couple of those top tier shows, right?
Correct.
Yeah, so how many points is that compared to like a lower tiered show when you get second?
So I believe the point system, like for second place, for example, uh-huh. is 7 points at uh-huh. the top tier shows. And at the just like a regular, just like say you're just doing like Golden State Championships, I believe it's only 4.
Okay.
It's only 4. It might be 5, but it's only a couple points difference. But I do believe it changed recently, but I believe that the first place was like ridiculous. Whenever you were getting, because the point system changed. So before it was like you only went on points. Mm-hmm. And the point system, I believe, at the top tier shows, if you got first place, was like, I don't know, like 16 points or something crazy.
Right. And now you just qualify for the Olympia.
Now qualify. Yeah. Right. So it doesn't matter anymore. But yeah, that's how it used to be. And that's why the top tier show. That's why if you were a really good athlete and you wanted to go to, you know, the Olympia, mm-hmm. like last year, then you would go to these top tier shows because you knew that those points were going to be really, really high. And you wanted to like get those points to go.
Right. And so this year they're doing the elimination round. Is that correct?
I believe so. I believe they're going to do, I think only top 10. It may be top 15. I don't know if they're going to change it just due to COVID and stuff. Right. I'm not sure exactly what the rules and stuff are going to be for this year. Mm-hmm. But I know that only a certain amount of people get to go to finals. So everybody, so it's going to be obviously everybody that qualified plus the top 5 point earners. So right now it's looking like 38 people, including the top 5. So right now it's like 38 people that are getting to go. Mm-hmm. Obviously that could change if a new person gets qualified before.
Yeah. And so for our listeners, just to understand, the elimination round, they added that in, I think, before COVID started, just as a safeguard for if it was just kind of a fluke that someone won a pro show, but maybe they weren't up against like the top athletes and things like that, to kind of, I think they were predicting that they would have a large number of people qualified pre-COVID. And now that, you know, COVID hit, what are your thoughts on just, I mean, for example, like your co-host Beatrice, like she only has one opportunity to qualify. What are your thoughts on how that's all kind of panned out with COVID, with international people, you know, not being able to compete in the United States and things like that? What are your thoughts there?
It's sad, honestly. It sucks. You know, it's just one of those things where you're just like, unfortunately, what can you do? You know, there's really not much. It is a good thing that they are doing the show and they're allowing the top 3 instead of just the first place. So they are awarding top 3 to qualify for the Olympia at this show.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So at least they're doing that, which is real. I thought was so amazing. I'm really glad they're doing that because Beatrice only has that one show, and there's a bunch of really good athletes that have already been to the Olympia that are trying to qualify there. So
yeah, I know Phoebe Hagen is one of them, and I know there's several. I mean, and that's like their one shot there in Europe, it seems like. So
yeah, it is. So it sucks. You know, I hate that this year has gone that way for the international people and just people that haven't been able to, you know, travel and do all that. It's just, it's kind of a nightmare, but hopefully, you know, I'm really glad that they're still having the Olympia and all that. And
yeah,
you know, it's 100%.
Yeah. So what are your, are you doing any more shows before the Olympia?
I am. I actually don't have them 100% picked out yet. There's a couple that we're looking at. And then obviously we're going to play it by ear. They've been adding a couple of shows here and there. So if one pops up that I want to do, then we'll do that. But I'm aiming for the end of November, or anywhere from middle of November to early December to be able to compete before I get on stage at the Olympia.
Okay. So any clues as to what ones you might be looking at?
Well, I really wanted to do the Arizona Wings of Strength Pro because it's right here.
Yeah.
But they ended up moving it to Vegas.
Oh, okay.
and I don't know if they're going to move it back or not, but right now it's in Vegas. And there's two other shows that same weekend, two other pro shows that are going to be on this same weekend. So I don't know if I'm going to end up going to the Arizona one since it's not even here, mm-hmm. or if I'm going to go to a different one, because there's a couple other ones that I'm looking at too that are the same weekend. So we'll see.
Yeah. And so for the listeners that I just wanted to explain really quick, the October 17th date is basically the cutoff for this year's Olympia. So it sounds like the shows that you would be picking would actually qualify you for 2021. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. I think that's a smart strategy. And then do you feel like with, it sounds like you do a lot of competitions pretty much year round. What do you think kind of allows you to be able to stay in prep that long and to do multiple shows back to back? What are some things that have helped you?
Honestly, it's just having to be strategic about, like, you know, reversing and stuff like that to make sure that my body stays in a good place and it doesn't hit a plateau. If I do feel like it's hitting a plateau, then we will up the calories, and then that usually pretty much spikes my metabolism to start going again, and then we can just pull back whenever we need to. So we're just constantly reversing, pulling mm-hmm. back, reversing, pulling back. So that really just helps. The reversing, upping the calories whenever we can is just really, really beneficial to keep your body going for a long period of time.
Awesome. So has anything changed about your training style over the past couple of years? Like when you went from, you know, having your husband train you to switching over to Jamie DeBernard as your coach, did you see anything like different as far as your training methods go?
Not really. So Jamie, she does my layout for me. So she does my split, my workout split, but I create my own workouts. I do all my own workouts.
Okay.
I just enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And ever since I've met her, she's never had any issue because she knows that I train really hard. She knows that I know what I'm doing. So there's never been an issue there, but as far as like having like unique, like training methods or anything like that, I really wouldn't say that they're unique. I personally just love a lot of volume. I really like to go heavy on certain sets. So like I do a lot of pyramid sets where I start with a lighter weight and I do more reps, and then I just work my way up to a heavier weight and lower reps during that set. So a pyramid set is just like where you do, you'll do a set of 20 with lighter weight, then you'll go up in weight and you'll do a set of 15, and then you'll stop and you'll go up in weight, and then you'll do a set of 12. And so as the weight increases, the reps decrease. So that way you're challenging mm-hmm. yourself to be able to get better with your strength. But you're also, for me, it's kind of like meeting in the middle because I like doing volume. I just personally like it. And then, cause I like being able to focus on form versus weight. I just think that, you know, it's helped me a ton to be able to just drop back the weight and really focus on the muscle engagement and the form. But also I want to build my strength. So, you know, the last like two or three sets, I like to go lower reps, heavier weight, just to make sure that I'm always challenging myself too.
Awesome. Yeah, we had a listener, and I totally agree with her, so I want to ask you this question. She had mentioned that she just absolutely loves your shoulders, and so she wanted to know if there was anything particular that you did to help build your upper body, any favorite exercises that you may have for your shoulders and developing them?
Lateral raises, 100%. The most basic, best exercise you can do for shoulder growth, 100%. Like, tons of volume. So if you want to grow your delts, I recommend starting every single upper body day, even if it's back. Like, I don't even care. Like, I would train the crap out of my shoulders because I trained them wrong for so long that I actually started, because I would try to use way more weight. So, like, I started, okay, you know what, I'm just going to do as minimal weight as possible and just focus on form, engagement, and blood flow. So I would constantly just do so much lateral raises to where my shoulders literally felt like they were going to fall off. And I would just like do, I don't know, hundreds of reps, just like over and over and over and over. And then also keeping the tension on the delt. So instead of coming all the way down mm-hmm. and letting your arms kind of relax, come, like, once you go up to the lateral raise and you come down, stop. Like, force yourself to stop before your shoulders get, or before your arms get down to like your thighs, Force it to stop and then come back up. So you're keeping tension on the delt the entire time. That really, really helped me. And use like lightweight, like 5 pounds, 5 to 7 pounds.
I think that's a good pro tip, because I feel like if I go heavy in weight, my traps start to try to work in. I don't know if you ever experienced that, but.
Yeah, that's how I trained wrong for a long time before I met my husband, because I was going way too heavy and I would use my traps to lift up the weight versus my delt.
Yeah, I have like man traps because I've done the same thing. That's so funny. In terms of, so the same person wanted to kind of know what the difference was between your mindset as an NPC athlete and then also versus an IFBB. Was there anything about like your mindset, time management, life balance, work stuff, things that you found when you went pro? Was there any changes to any of those things?
I would definitely say I obviously took it way more serious as a pro because I knew that the competition was going to be much higher. So once I turned pro, I was like, all right, now I got to find a posing coach now. I got to find a coach that knows the ins and outs of all these things because I know nothing. And the only way I'm going to be successful is if like I understand the sport and I'm doing what everything that I'm supposed to be doing, which before it was kind of like I would kind of dance around things. Like, you know, the posing I didn't take as serious. I taught myself, like I never really wanted to go and search for a posing coach. But as, you know, I got into that really competitive level in the pro level, then that's whenever I started taking like the little details more seriously, like the polish more seriously, the details, stuff like that, that I never really thought about as an amateur, started really resonating with me as a pro because I started realizing like, these type of things they're going to start looking at, because once you get to the pro level, the smallest details matter. So like as an amateur, of course, the small details matter, but not as much as they do as a pro. They don't really pick you apart as an amateur like they do to you as a pro. And that's just because you're up against so many incredible athletes that take this very, very seriously, that some of these people even do this like that's like their career. They do this as a job. So knowing that you're going up against people like that, I just knew that I had to take it a lot more seriously. So my mindset definitely switched from, okay, I can kind of get away with this, I can kind of get away with that, to, okay, I absolutely cannot get away with anything. So I need to like make sure that I'm dotting all my I's, crossing all my T's, doing everything that I needed to do. And, you know, just I took a lot of things like recovery, making sure that I drink all my water, like little things like that, that I would neglect as an amateur. Like some days I would hit my water, some days I didn't. You know, some days I would stretch, some days I didn't. You know, I never practiced posing as an amateur ever, ever, ever. I would start practicing like 2 weeks out from my show. Oh, now okay. I practice every day in off season. I do like everything that I do in prep, I do also in my off season now. So it's like,
okay. Nothing. I was going to ask that. Like, yeah. When do you practice posing? How do you work it into your day, daily routine?
I usually do it either right after I get done training, okay, or after I do cardio in the morning. Okay. Sometimes if like, you know, I have a call or maybe I have like an hour in between one of my calls, I'll practice in between then. So it really just is when I can fit it in. But honestly, like I have all my schedules always laid out like a week in advance. And so like I always know whenever I can fit it in usually. And then I really like to practice like after I get done training because I feel like I just feel a little bit more like loose because I, you know, just had a bunch of blood flow and I just feel good. And I usually have my music playing in the garage, something like that. So like, I always feels good for me to just throw on my heels and practice after I get done training. I really like doing that.
Yeah. So can you tell us about this? There was another listener that asked a question about, I think she had listened to your podcast, which by the way, can you tell us about what podcast you co-host?
Yeah. So. Yeah, it's called The Center Stage, and me and another IFBB pro, Beatrice, we just talk about all things bikini and fitness, and we just like to have a platform to talk about, you know, our experiences. We like to interview some people, get other people's experiences, and then we like to talk about, like, you know, we'll ask questions on our Instagrams and just try to get what people want to know, what people you know, some things that people want us to discuss, we'll just go on there and discuss, but it's really anything. I mean, we're open books. We like to talk mainly about like stuff that we've experienced ourselves because we feel like personal experiences, a lot of people can relate to stuff like that.
Yeah, this person in particular had a question. She had heard you talk about your feedback with Sandy, that when you got second place, that it was more just your hair, hair color. And then I believe you got some sort of like balayage or darkened it a little bit. How did your feedback change when you did that? And are you gonna, will you stay blonde for the Olympia? I mean, these are all a bunch of questions, but kind of talk about your hair if you don't mind.
Yes, of course. I actually like talking about this just because I've had so much experience with it. And it is, they do get really picky as a blonde whenever you are at the pro level. Honestly, I never got any feedback ever as an amateur about my hair, not one time. So I turned pros platinum blonde, never got told anything. And then like I said, once you get to that pro level, they start picking you apart a little bit more just because they have to. And you start getting those, like, you know, those little details that could make a difference. And so, you know, I always go to the judges after, you know, a show, and I always want to get their feedback in person. I want to see what they have to say. And honestly, you know, like, it's really just a contrast thing. That's all it is. So like, once you're under the lights, you know, if you have blonde hair, it just amplifies under the stage. And for me, it just kind of would make my face kind of washed out, even though like, my makeup was, it never looked bad or anything like that. If there was something wrong with my makeup, they would tell me and I would fix it. So, you know, at the shows where I was getting second place, they just said, if we had to pick something apart, it's really just something with the contrast with your hair. So, you know, Sandy had mentioned maybe just going a little bit shade darker. She asked if I, you know, would consider doing like a brunette just to see what it looked like maybe a wig or something to see like just what it looked like on stage. But I'm definitely going to stay blonde. I'm not going to do a wig. I'm going to stay blonde. I love my blonde hair and everything. And it's not that you can't do well as a blonde. And I don't want any blondes out there to think that they need to dye their hair or change their hair color, because that's not true. You just need to make sure that your face pops and you have contrast. So for me, for example, you know, I needed to maybe just add a little bit more blush, so that way my face had some color to it, maybe a different color lipstick, to just make, you know, my face pop a little bit more, so it's not so washed out against my hair color. And then doing the darker root made the contrast a lot better on stage as well. So on the top of my head, it wasn't so bright because I had that contrast of the darker root, and then it flowed into the blonde, which honestly, it just looked really, really good on stage. And my feedback was that it was perfect. Sandy came up to me afterwards and was like, I love the change in the hair. It's so subtle, but you can tell a huge difference on stage. You know, it's not so bright next to your face, and it's just, it complements you really well. And you have to take into consideration that I am very pale. So even though I do have my tan on, I don't tan my face. So so like my face is just the makeup. And I have very fair skin. So, you know, you have somebody like Rafaela who has blonde hair, but she has a darker skin tone than me. So like her face is just naturally a little bit darker. So her contrast is going to be much different than mine. So you also have to take that into consideration too. So it's just like a very personal thing for me. So I feel like people automatically are like, oh, well, I have blonde hair, so maybe I need to dye it. And that's not true. It really just is just like, it's just a contrast thing on me personally. You know, it's something that, for whatever reason, my hair and my face are just like washing together, and we're just trying to figure out what's going to be the best way to kind of separate that to where like my hair is a different contrast than my skin tone.
And so can you talk a little bit about your switch from a red suit to a blue suit? I think that was based on Sandy's feedback as well.
Yeah. So actually, my very first show, I loved the red suit. Oh my gosh, I loved it so much. And I really didn't want to change it, but I got feedback because I had platinum blonde hair and the red suit, and it was like a bright red. Mm-hmm. And Sandy actually wasn't even in that judging panel at that show. It was a completely separate judging panel and a different judge that told me that it was clashing. They said that the bright blonde and the bright red were just too much together. They were like, if you could just tone down the hair, it would be fine. Or just choose a different suit color. And, you know, blondes look great in blue, purples, blues, you know, royal blues, light blues, anything like that, like complements blondes really well. Some people there, I've seen a ton of girls that pull off red and blonde, and they place well, they do great, but for whatever reason, it just wasn't my color. So it wasn't me, it wasn't my color, it wasn't what they wanted to see with me. I turned pro in a teal suit. It's like a teal blue. Mm-hmm. And so whenever I did get in front of Sandy again, so that was my feedback, and I ended up getting my very first show, that my feedback was that, well, I didn't want to make any dramatic changes. I had a show that following weekend, and I didn't want to make any dramatic changes because I was going to be in front of Sandy, so I kind of wanted to get her feedback too. So I ended up getting in front of Sandy with the same red suit, but I actually put on a wig. So I got in front of Sandy with a wig. And it was like, it was a brunette and blonde highlighted wig. So it looked blonde on stage. It didn't really look brunette, but it was darker than my normal hair color, of course. So I did that with the suit, but it was also curly. It was completely different than my regular hair. So Sandy is used to seeing me blonde hair straight, like platinum blonde straight. Uh-huh. And then I go on stage with this wig and it's not platinum blonde. It's not straight. It was like a natural wave. It had like mm-hmm. a natural wave curl to it. And it wasn't long. So it was like really short. It like only went like not even halfway down my back, not even like above oh. halfway down my back.
Okay.
So she saw me and she was just like, what the heck? Like, what did you do to your hair? She's like, I didn't even recognize you, you know? And I did, I looked so different. And she's like, did you dye your hair? Is this a wig? And I was like, oh, it's a wig. And she was like, you should go back to your blonde. Cause she loves my blonde, you know? She's uh-huh. like, you should go back to your blonde. She's like, maybe just, you know, a more natural blonde, something that's, you know, dirty blonde. And I'm like, all right, cool. So I ended up going back to the blonde. And then she was like, weren't you wearing your blue suit when you turned pro? And I was like, yeah. She's like, I think blue suits you really well. She's like, you should try, you know, try a different show with a blue suit and see what you get feedback with. And I'm like, all right. So I contacted my suit sponsors and stuff, and they ended up sending me a different suit with a blue. And I used that the rest of the time because I got great feedback. So I got on there again. I just went a little bit darker with my hair. So I was blonde. It's just a dirty blonde. And then I picked the blue suit, and that's whenever I got my first placing as a pro, as a sixth place. So,
okay. Yeah, and is Margaret Chin she's your suit designer, right? You do
she
Toxic
is my
Angels? Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, your suit's very pretty. I love it. So
thank you.
Will you be going with that for the Olympia, I'm assuming, then? Is that?
She's actually making my Olympia suit right now, so it will be awesome. Different.
Oh, okay. All right, well, we'll look for that. And in terms of your lower body, so we talked about your upper body. Is there anything in particular that you just really love about training with developing your glutes and glute ham tie-in and all of that?
Oh man, just I'm telling you, volume, like that's the one thing that really helped me be able to, you know, I always choose a challenging weight, so it's not like I'm using just a ton of lightweight. Everything that I do is challenging. So I pick a challenging weight. I always try to make sure I stay in a rep range between 10 to 20. So, which is a pretty big rep range, but you know, like I just really try to just like push myself. So and it's because I've trained with my husband for so long. So my husband is a bodybuilder. He trains like a bodybuilder. He's trained me like a bodybuilder. So now that's just how I train. And, you know, I'm constantly just doing supersets. I think supersets are amazing. So I always do supersets. I'm always like doing some type of band work. I'm always keeping tension on the glutes. I don't squeeze a ton at the top. There's very few exercises where I will actually squeeze my glutes at the top. For the longest time, I was thrusting my hips too far forward, and I was using way more of my lower back instead of my glutes, which I see a ton in people whenever they're training. They're using way more of their lower back, and they're coming up and they're squeezing. So they're thinking that they're engaging the glutes, which you are in a way, but you're not engaging them as much as you could be. You know, keeping the tension on the glutes, not coming up all the way, not squeezing at the top. Sometimes it's just making sure, and just like I said about the shoulders, instead of coming all the way down to the sides and then coming up, if you stop and then come up before you let the delts relax, same thing with the glutes. If you do a squat, say you do a sumo squat, and instead of coming all the way up, thrusting your hips forward and squeezing, just come up and stop and engage on the way down. So you're engaging on the way down. you know, make sure you're getting low enough, make sure your chest is staying up. Like a lot of people are leaning way too far forward. And they're getting there again, they're using more of their lower back to push the weight up. They're using more of like their quads to push the weight up. They're not engaging their actual glute muscle. And the same thing with hip thrusts. So many people try and do so much weight on hip thrusts, and they're never even being able to reach the peak of their contraction of their engagement ever, because they're not getting the weight high enough to even be able to squeeze the glute at the top and hold it. So I see there's so many things that I see wrong when people train with glutes. And mainly it's because they're not adding tension. They're not adding, they're doing way too much weight. They're not being able to use that contraction and that muscle engagement. And some people just don't know how to use mind muscle connection, which is huge. So yeah. That's, I actually did a podcast episode on mind muscle connection. Pretty much that's all we talked about. So
yeah, I think that's really important. So you'll have to go check her out and listen to that episode to learn a little bit more about that. Can you share with us anything that's unique about your peaking methods? Do you have anything different that you kind of think that is different than what other people might do? I know it's unique for everybody and it probably changes every time, but
Yeah, I mean, it does. It really just is based off of, you know, how your body is responding that week. But mainly it's nothing unique or anything crazy. I just try to reverse. So we try to make sure that I'm always in a good spot to where I can start adding calories leading up to the show. So we usually drop my food, like a little bit lower. So like I'll have my normal foods, everything like that. And then we'll drop a little bit, usually starting like that Saturday or that Sunday, the week before. So we'll drop the foods up until like Wednesday, and then Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, I fill out. I start the reverse process and I start filling out those couple days before the show.
Okay. And I'm assuming you are like tapering cardio and kind of deloading a little bit with your training, or
cardio
just
all
pushing through every day?
Yeah. I do cardio and train all the way up till Friday, the day before.
Okay. Do you use HIIT or do you utilize LISS?
I utilize LISS a lot. HIIT, we usually take out, depending on, but we usually take it out the week before the show.
Okay. Just like with inflammation, that's what I was kind of wondering.
Yeah.
So in terms of LISS, what's your favorite type? What do you like to do?
I just walk on treadmill. So I just do, I just walk like 3 to 3.5, and, sometimes I'll do an incline, like a 10 to 12 incline, and sometimes I'll just regular walk. So it depends with, which is how I'm feeling. If I feel like I need the extra, like if I'm like, man, I really feel like I need to push myself, then I will up the incline. But if I feel like I'm right where we need to be, I don't need to do anything extra, then I will just do regular walking, no incline.
Okay. And what's the highest your cardio typically is?
This year it hasn't even been that high. It's been, I think, an hour max was the highest that it got. I never went over 60 minutes. And then, last year it was like 2 hours.
Ooh. Okay.
Yeah.
And so you maintain that throughout the whole year, or is it going peaks and valleys a little bit?
Yeah. Last year it was like, I had to keep upping it. I had to keep up with my cardio. It was because I just prepped for so long.
Yeah.
That was my first prep with Jamie. So we never did the reversing like we did this year. This year, it was we peaked perfect every time. We reversed into every single show. My body responded incredibly. You know, I found out a lot of things this year with my body that I didn't realize that now looking back, I'm like, oh, well, that's probably what it was. I bloated a lot last year. I had a lot of water retention, a lot of things that were preventing me from being able to reverse. We were constantly having to pull back, constantly having to do more cardio. But in hindsight now, after this year, I know that it was the food choices. And it wasn't that I was eating bad or anything like that. It was that I wasn't eating the quality that I should have been eating. Like, I should have been sticking to more natural whole foods, but instead last year, I would sub, like instead of having rice, for example, or oats, for example, I would have rice cakes, and it was like the flavored ones. So it wasn't like I wasn't eating the plain ones. I was eating the flavored ones, which they have like maltodextrin and stuff like that in them. And it's just a preservative for the processed foods and the, like, the coating that's on, like, the caramel rice cakes. And then I also had Carb Master yogurts, which I took those out this year. And then also the Walden's Farm sugar-free, calorie-free syrup. I had that last year, which I've always prepped on that. So I never thought that it was an issue. But now this year, after taking that out, I realized that it was making me hold water. So I've never used it since. I haven't used it this whole entire prep or anything like that this year.
Yeah, I'm so glad that you mentioned that, because listeners, if you haven't seen her apps, you need to take a look at her IG, which we'll get to that in a second. But I really feel strongly about those kinds of things that can really cause inflammation, like in the gut. And so I'm glad that you mentioned that you're eating more macronutrient dense foods. And yeah,
I never thought, like, I really didn't, because I've always prepped on stuff like this. So I never, ever, ever in a million years thought that's what it was. And so, you know, last year it was like, I just thought, I honestly thought my body was just not responding. I was like, oh my gosh, like, I just kept doing it. I'd never even thought anything was wrong. I just thought that my body was tired and it was fighting me. And instead, now looking back, I'm like, wow, it was literally just, I could have just taken those things out and I would have been fine. But yeah, it was the rice cake, the flavored, it's just the flavored rice cakes. If you just do like the lightly salted or whatever, those are mm-hmm. fine.
Okay.
The protein powder too is huge. Protein powder is the other thing that I used every single day that I never in a million years would have thought that would have made me hold water. And I haven't used it this year at all since I found that out. So
did you use a dairy product, like a whey, or did you ever do like vegan, or does it even matter? It's more about the artificial sweeteners.
Yeah, it's like the artificial stuff. And but yeah, I did use whey, which could have been why. I don't know. I don't use vegan protein powder, so I'm not 100% sure if it would have made a difference.
Okay.
But I do know for sure that you know, powders and stuff like that, if it's just not natural and if it's not whole foods, when you get really lean, your body starts becoming extremely, extremely sensitive.
Yes.
So it's going to respond to whatever you feed it. So the best way to, you know, not have any risk, anything like that, is to just take it out and just eat whole food.
Yeah. And another thing, and I always mention this to my athletes, that, you know, the thermic effect of food, your body's going to burn more calories breaking, you know, a chicken breast down rather than a fast digesting protein. So, and you're also going to feel more satiated with those whole foods, I feel like, too.
That was going to be the next thing that I said. So after I took out, I always had a Carb Master yogurt. I put my protein powder in the Carb Master. I'd mix it up. And then I would put, I would pick the plainest cereal ever, because I always had like a cereal, because I know it's a fast carb, after my workouts. So I would always have, it was just like the Rice Chex cereal, something rice-based. So I was always very strategic with what I did, but it still wasn't enough.
So
just doing that on its own, I would crave so much sugar afterwards. After I took that out and I did whole foods only, I started realizing I have zero cravings, like zero. I had no cravings. I never thought about, you know, I was never hungry, even though I was on low calories. I was always like, wow, I am loving this all whole food natural thing. Like, at first, of course, it's an adjustment. So I was like missing my cereal and missing the sweets and stuff like that. But then I started realizing how good I felt on it, and I never looked back.
Yeah. And so do you have a fiber goal that you try to hit too? Because that's one thing I've noticed too, that when with the whole foods, you know, especially like the complex carbohydrates, the fiber also kind of helps with satiation. So does Jamie give you a fiber goal, and what is that, if you don't mind me asking, if she does? I don't know.
Yeah. I believe it's, I can look, I think it's 25.
Okay. Yeah. That sounds about right. Yeah. Did you have an easier time hitting that when you kind of switched from those?
Well, I take a fiber supplement from Project AD. So I take and I take two scoops. So, I always hit my fiber goal. I take my two scoops of fiber along with two scoops of green supplement. So I just mix them together because they're both chocolate flavor. So I just mix the green supplement and the fibers together and drink that every day, twice a day.
Okay. Well, I have so appreciated you coming on. You've just given us so many nuggets of great information. To kind of close things out, I was wondering if you could share with the listeners any sort of advice that you have for competitors, or maybe just tell us, you know, something that you've learned about yourself through this process. Maybe like your, you know, top five favorite reasons for living the prep life. So I kind of close things out.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So I'll start with my top five favorite, you know, just prep life. You know, obviously number one is the challenge that it brings, to make myself better every single day. The challenge is something that I strive for every single day. I love it. I love the challenge. So that obviously prep brings that. So that, and then, number two is that I love the changes that you get to see in your physique from day to day. It's crazy how different you can look if you really just are doing everything 100% and giving your all. So to see those changes during prep is obviously something that's so fascinating. And then number three is having a goal to work towards every day is motivating. Like I said previously, like, I've always been an athlete. I've always had something to work towards. So, you know, having small goals, whether it be competing or not, it doesn't have to be competing, but setting goals for yourself and actually trying to achieve those goals is something that everybody, I feel like, should be doing. So whether that's competing, whether it's work, whether it's school, whether it's, you know, your family, like something that you're doing with your kids, like it could be anything. Setting goals and then like doing something for your health and doing something for your family or something to better yourself is something that I feel like everybody should be, you know, doing. So prep brings that out in me a lot. So I love that. Mm-hmm. And then this is funny, fasted cardio. I love fasted cardio. My day started. I look forward to it. So prep, I love my fasted cardio prep.
Yeah, and not then, many people probably have that on their five.
No, my gosh. Oh, I know. Psycho, but I love it.
That's awesome.
And then number five is just the fact that when I'm prepping, I know that I'm inspiring others to chase their dreams and their goals. And that's really motivating to me, and that keeps me going. So definitely those are going to be my top five.
Love those.
And then for the advice to give to competitors that are looking for, you know, that are going to be competing for their first time, honestly, number one is obviously just to find a coach that you trust with your life, literally, because, you know, it can be very dangerous for your health if you get into the wrong hands of a coach who could literally care less about you. So you always want to find a coach that's going to take care of you, that's going to put your health first. You know, all those good things are very important to look for in a coach, and also somebody that like you trust. You want somebody that you can like confide in, you know, that you can be honest with, open with, that is going to be helping you, that's going to be able to help you reach your goals, not somebody that's going to just be like telling you what to do and then leaving you hanging. You want somebody that's going to help you in all aspects to, that just cares about you. So finding that coach is really important. And then also going into every single show that you do with zero expectations always. You know, you should want to compete to get better. You don't want to compete just to win. If you are ever in this sport to win, you're never going to come out satisfied. And that's just because there's so many ups and downs in this sport. You're never going to win every single show you do. You're just not. So having zero expectations and going with the expectation, like, I'm just going to learn. Like, that's what I want to do. I want to learn and get better. And that's the goal. And if you have that in your head, you'll never be disappointed. The only time you'll be disappointed is if you know that you went in there without giving your all. So that's always, you know, in the back of my head, like, as long as I gave my all, that's the only thing that matters. And then I can just move forward and learn from my experiences from this. And then another one is going to be to practice your posing like it's your job, because posing is just as important, if not more important, than the physique. Because I think physique obviously is definitely very important, but if you don't know how to pose your physique properly, then it could be just a waste. So making sure that you are taking care of your posing and doing all that is really, really important. And then asking questions, make sure you understand why and what you're doing. It's okay to ask questions. If you're ever, you know, in a situation with a coach where you feel like they're getting mad at you or upset at you for asking questions, or they're telling you like, oh, well, do you just not trust me because you're asking questions without explaining it, then that's a red flag. I would definitely not stay with a coach that gets frustrated at you for just wanting to know what the heck you're doing with your body. I don't think that that's a bad thing at all. So if you ever are with a coach that, you know, acts like that, I probably would start searching for a different coach. Those are definitely my top
those are,
ones.
Yeah, those are great. I love that you mentioned all of those things. So if our listeners wanted to reach out to you and, you know, ask you questions or just tell you how much they appreciated this episode, where could they find you?
Yeah. So you can look for, you can either search my name, Ashlyn Brown, in Instagram, or my Instagram handle is going to be at AB_BikiniFit. So those are going to be the two ways that you can find me on Instagram. I don't really get on Facebook that much. I do have a Facebook under Ashlyn Brown, but I don't really get on there and engage with my people. So
yeah,
the best out to me would definitely be Instagram.
Okay. Well, I'll be sure to put those in the show notes so that they can reach out to you. And I just wanted to tell you, thank you so much for coming on. I learned so much about you, and we'll be cheering for you at the Olympia. So best of luck to you, and thank you for your time.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. I had such a blast and had so much fun on here today. So I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Yes. Thank you. All right. Well, that concludes this episode. This is your founder and CEO of Glam Girl Bikini, Amy Anger, signing off. Thanks for listening, guys.